Bill Novelli from AARP, thanks for joining us on HealthOH.org.
Thank you.
As everyone knows, the organization represents people 50 and older, so they're either on Medicare or about to be on Medicare. For many people in the association, their financial security is linked to what their health care costs may be. So through that prism, what does the association see as the most pressing health care issue out there at this moment?
I think there are three. First of all, the spiraling costs. And these are costs that are hitting everybody, not just employers, not even employees, but everybody, all families across the country. So cost is probably the big thing, and it's really going out of sight. And then the other two, of course, are the huge numbers of uninsured that we have in this country, and then the quality of care that in many cases is actually going down.
A while back, AARP helped found Divided We Fail. Is that the cornerstone of the association's approach to what needs to be done next?
Divided We Fail is a cornerstone for us. We started off by saying that the two biggest issues that we really have on our agenda are health care reform and long-term financial security. Both are big problems, and of course they're connected. I mean, you can't have financial security unless you have adequate health care. And so we decided that the best thing we could do would be to start a movement, nothing short of a movement. And we began Divided We Fail, and we now have three major partners, the Business Roundtable, consisting of the CEOs of America's biggest companies, the National Federation of Independent Business, which represents medium and small companies, where most of the jobs come from in this country, and then the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, is the fastest growing labor union in North America. And we've been called strange bedfellows for a reason, because if you put business and consumers and labor unions together, they don't always see eye to eye. But that's our coalition, and we've got a set of principles to which we agree, and we've basically said the only way to achieve our common goals is to work together, and we'll arm wrestle later over the details.
But at the 10,000-foot level, you do all agree on the same principles, but isn't it when you get into the weeds that the real hard stuff begins?
Yes.
And have you started discussing that with these strange bedfellows?
We have. We're working on all these different issues, and we're basically saying, you know, where can we find common ground? Sometimes it's easy. For example, we all work together on the state children's health insurance program, because everybody believes that we need to insure our kids in this country. Another example of an easy one is health information technology. Business wants this. Labor wants this. We want this. We think it's going to make a big difference in terms of quality of care, reducing medical errors, and saving money. But there are other areas where we're not in agreement. And the idea, though, is that we can work it through. We can work together. We can find that common ground. And truthfully, so far, so good.
Well, what are the areas where there is no agreement at the moment? I'm guessing it's about how to bring down costs in a more significant way than IT would, for example. Is it a single-payer approach? Is it maintaining the employer-based approach?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there are some instances. Let's take, for example, the single-payer
okay.
approach. I mean, there are some among us who probably would like that, but don't think it's politically realistic. And so that hasn't been a sticking point for us. Nobody's going around saying single payer. People tend to say, and I'm talking about my partners now as well as AARP, we tend to say we've got to be realistic. Politics is the art of the practical. We're probably going to need some kind of a public-private hybrid partnership. So let's work on that. Now, one example of an area where we didn't see eye to eye was in California. Mm-hmm. Where last year and then early this year, healthcare reform, real reform, was in the offing, and then it went down to defeat. And there we came into some disagreement on some areas. For example, the idea of whether or not to have an employer mandate. Now, this was not something that NFIB favored, and it was something that we thought was probably a good idea if it could really help to make healthcare affordable. So we are finding areas of agreement and areas of disagreement, but we're soldiering on.
What did you learn about the California incident where you couldn't come to an agreement? in terms of what may be applied to how you move forward on the federal level?
I think we learned a couple of things. One is we learned that we do work well together. And here I'm talking about the four principals, Todd Stottlemyre of NFIB and Andy Stern, SEIU, John Castellani of the Business Roundtable, and our staffs and myself. We've learned that we actually like each other. We can work together. We can disagree without being disagreeable. So we definitely learned that, and it's kept our coalition strong. The other thing, though, is we've learned, of course, and we knew this going in, that underneath that 10,000-foot set of principles, there are going to be disagreements, and we have to find our way out of that. An example of that would be health coverage for small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, we were in disagreement, and now we're saying, well, let's figure out what it was that we disagreed on. We all agree that small businesses should be able to offer health coverage, so let's see how to make that work. And now there's a pending bill, the Durbin bill, where we think that we can actually come together.
And going back to something you said a few moments ago about the creation of some type of a public-private partnership, go into some more detail on that point.
Well, the Business Roundtable has said repeatedly, we don't want to get out of the business of offering health care to our employees. We think we do it pretty well. We think it gives us a certain competitive edge. We want to continue in this, but we also need relief. We can't keep absorbing these soaring healthcare costs, and we can't keep passing them on to our employees. So there's got to be some way out of this. And so one of the thoughts that we've been discussing, the four groups, has been how can we set up a system where, you know, you still have Medicare perhaps, you still have SCHIP, and you still have Medicaid and so forth, but at the same time, you're coming up with some way of offering insurance to people in the individual market who need it, the employer market, and also government. How do you put those things together so that they fit? And so at the same time, we have cost containment. So those are the kinds of discussions that we're having.
And the answers?
Well, there are no easy answers, of course. But there are a lot of, you know, here's the thing, Jackie, that I find fascinating. There are a lot of policy ideas. A lot of policy ideas that probably make sense and that we're sifting our way through right now. And at the end of the day, I keep thinking to myself, that's not the problem. The policy ideas are there to be worked through. The problem is the politics. The politics of healthcare is more difficult. The partisan gridlock is very corrosive right now. And we have to say to ourselves, is that going to change in a new administration, in a new Congress? How can we lay the groundwork now to get to a point where we actually do have a Congress and a new president that wants to do what's necessary to fix health care?
Well, you anticipated the next several questions I wanted to ask you, and that has to do with whether the political tone, if you have any real optimism that the political tone, the political ability to move forward on this in whatever direction that may be, is different now in 2008 than in the many years past when you've been at it.
Yes. I think that it can be different. Right now, there's a lot of partisanship. There's no question about it. But I think it can be different under a new administration and a new opportunity. And I think there are three basic reasons for this. It's what we started to talk about earlier, which is the public is very worried. Mm-hmm. And when I say the public, I'm not just talking about low-income people who can't afford health insurance. I'm talking about the American middle class.
Who see this very much as an economic issue.
They see it as an economic issue. They see it as an issue that's threatening their well-being, their ability to have a secure family life, and they're worried about their kids. Most of their children are not covered either. And so what you have here is a middle class that's worried and to a certain degree angry. And when the American middle class gets worried, I think politicians take note. The second reason why I think we can have a new day is, as I said before, business. What's happened back in 93 and 94 during the Clinton effort mm-hmm. to reform health care, business was basically saying, we can take care of this. We can take care of our employees. Let's not get government involved. And I think they've changed that tune. And what they're saying now is, we can't afford this any longer. We're not competitive. We need relief. We need something to happen to fix health care so that it's affordable for us and our employees and the rest of the country. And then I think the third reason is that the problem is so much worse. You know, there's a certain thought in our country, and unfortunately it's probably partly true, which is we only seem to be able to do anything when there's a crisis staring us in the face. I think there is a crisis. The quality of care, the 47 million people uncovered by health insurance, all the different things that we've talked about. So it may be that these things coming together can push us forwards towards solutions.
Another question I wanted to ask you in this kind of political context is this, and it's something I've asked others involved in this series of interviews. Which do you think is the better way to go, and which is the more practical way to go? Incremental or big and bold?
Big and bold, transformational, wipe the slate clean and start all over is the better way to go.
More practical?
The more practical way to go is incremental. And the reason for that is obvious. I mean, Congress, the administration, our system can't deal with really transformational change in a system as complex and as expensive as this one. So here's our great challenge, I think. We're going to have to do things in reasonable, bite-sized steps. But we're going to have to do it sequentially so that it makes sense, so that B follows A and C follows B in a sequential, logical pattern, and not just throw things at the wall. So I think the practical answer is we're going to have to have to figure out a way to find a path, a pathway to change, so that we can do things in proper sequence and make it work.
When you do things in what you call proper sequence, doesn't experience tell us, though, that the longer it goes on, the more opportunity there is for more,
That stuff happens.
Stuff happens, right?
Indeed. Yes. Stuff happens, and it can happen here. You know, the president could get distracted. You know, the Middle East could flare up. A million things can happen. And the longer it takes, the more danger there is that we go off the tracks. I think that's true. And that's why, ideally, in a perfect world, we would basically draw up a new system.
Do you think at this moment that Congress has the ability to approach this in the right framework, and that is that instead of looking at the piece parts, to look at the whole picture?
I think it would be hard. It's very hard the way we're set up with the political infighting we have, the jurisdictional disputes that we have. And let's face it, there's very, very little money to fix anything right now. I mean, we've got deficits and debt as far as the eye can see. And so the first question we have to ask is, you know, what really is feasible? And the second question we have to ask is, who's the president and who is the Congress? A president may approach this differently depending on who he is or she is. And certainly Congress, if we have a filibuster-proof Senate, that would be one thing. If we don't, that would be another thing. So there are a lot of moving pieces here to this puzzle.
And you're right, of course, at this moment, we don't know who the president will be, what the Congress will look like. But we do know, as you suggested, that the economy is not in great shape. And how much does that diminish the chances for change?
Yeah, it's more than the economy. Right now, we're in an economic downturn. We'll come out of that. But it's more than that. It's the deficit. It's the debt. It's the fact that there's just not a lot of money to do the kinds of reforms that are necessary in this country. And, you know, when you look at healthcare, it's a big, complex, costly system. There is money in the system to fix it, but it will require upfront investment for a return on investment later. So to give one really good example, we need evidence-based research. We've got to figure out what works. There are lots of estimates right now that half the care that's given is inappropriate or inadequate. Now, how will we do this? Well, we're going to have to invest in some kind of a system that's walled off from politics so that we can figure out what actually works in terms of medical devices, procedures, drugs, and so forth. That's going to take some money. Health IT will take some money. All these things will cost money with big payoffs down the road.
Maybe not even for a decade, which is a hard thing for politicians to accept. They want immediate results that they could take home.
If we could fix this, it would have been fixed. I mean, this is a very tough...
It's tough stuff. We've been talking mostly about action, potential action at the federal level, but there is so much activity at the state level. How much hope do you have that that's where real reform can come from?
When California healthcare reform failed, the lesson that many people drew from that was the states can't do it. And other people looked at Massachusetts and said, well, this isn't working as well as we had hoped, and therefore the states can't do it. It has to be resolved at the federal level. But I think we're seeing a different pattern right now. If you look at Minnesota or Illinois or Iowa, hopefully Wisconsin, even Massachusetts is making some progress. Little bits of the Schwarzenegger bill are now being brought forward in incremental form. I think the lesson is more complicated than that and more nuanced than that. I think the lesson might be the states can make progress, but we still need some kind of a federal overlay. Things like evidence-based research and dealing with ERISA and other things that only the feds can do. But I don't think we should draw any conclusions that the states can't do it. There are a lot of good things happening right now at the state level.
What do you think has been proven to work the best at the state level?
Well, they've been able to add children and adults to the roles of those who are covered by health insurance. There have been
greater cost than what was anticipated, though.
Yeah. There have been cost containment successes. There have been bulk buying partnerships to make drugs cheaper. There's nowhere where they've hit a 10 on a 10-point scale. But I think our people think that they've been hitting eights and nines. And a triple is worth something in baseball, and it's worth something in healthcare reform, too.
I do have one final question for you. If the sequential approach that you were describing a few minutes ago happens, what would be your pick for the first piece in that sequence?
I think, again, given the fact that we're talking about what's practical, I think we're going to have to do some things that are going to be they're going to help to bend that cost curve. They're going to help to contain costs, because that's what's hurting everybody right now. And so I think that health IT would be important. Figuring out how to pay for performance instead of just procedures would be important. The evidence-based research I talked about earlier, mm-hmm. trying to make drugs more affordable. There are a series of cost issues. But the thing that makes this really difficult is that there are other issues as well. I mean, we need to insure our kids. And so forth. So I would put cost high on the list, but I don't think you can just deal with cost alone.
Okay. Bill Novelli of AARP, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jackie.